Hi, and thank you for downloading the Touchpoint podcast. For the next 3 weeks, the hosts Chris Boyer and Reed Smith will be taking some personal time off. However, we will be back at the end of the year to wrap up 2022 with two brand new episodes. So be sure to tune back in on December 21st for the first of our two very special year-end shows. Until then, enjoy these best of shows of 2022. Lake Superior State University in Michigan recently published the banished words list. These are ones that they say are just used way too much, particularly in the business world.
Okay.
Have you ever said these before? For example, number two on the list, no worries.
I've used it in emails or text messages.
At the end of the day is another term.
So not like, hey, I need this by the end of the day, but like, at the end of the day, we're all just marketers. Yeah.
Here's another term, circle back, or the new normal.
Don't we have, that's a podcast, isn't it, on our network?
We're banished from their list. But my favorite is number nine on this list, which is the term, you're on mute.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, I'll tell you what, let's put a pin in it and we can circle back to this later in the show.
Yeah. At the end of the day, no worries.
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and patient engagement strategies for hospitals, health systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into digital tools, solutions, and strategies that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information with you and have fun along the way. Thanks for joining us. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to episode number 257 of Touchpoint, the first of 2022. I am Reed Smith. That is Chris Boyer.
Hey, Reed. And we're recording this on my birthday, actually. So there you go.
Yeah. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday. Well, I did see the meme about everybody realizing that 2022 is pronounced 2022. You know, so far the year, it's early, but it's off to a good start.
Yeah. We'll circle back to that in March.
Well, thanks everybody for joining us again. We're getting close to our anniversary, which is in February, the 1st of February. Mm-hmm. There we'll be kicking off year six of the show, which is kind of hard to believe.
Wow.
But certainly appreciate everybody's support and willingness to listen. Got a nice note from one of our loyal listeners there at the end of the year that he had binged listened to about 9 hours of Touchpoint over the holidays. I'm glad people find value, and certainly as you all still listen, we will still record. And certainly appreciate that. Quick plug for the website, touchpoint.health. Over there, you can find out certainly more about this episode or the show you're listening to or other shows on our network, other show hosts, topics, et cetera. While you're there, you can sign up for the TPS report. You'll notice it up in the top navigation of the website. All that does, you pass over the fence your email address, and we will send you one email a week. That's it. Send you an email each Monday morning, kick off the week with a few articles that might be of interest. So we will tell you what, take a pause here, and you can go do that or make a note of it, and then we'll be back with today's show. Chris, in today's digital age, your online reputation, as we all know, is crucial. With customers relying on online reviews, your first impression is also compared directly with your competitors.
Sure is. And Reed, consider this. 86% of patients today read online reviews, and 73% demand that that healthcare provider has a minimum 4-star rating.
Demand. They demand it.
Yeah, they do.
Well, to stand out, choose reputation to help amplify your brand and to build trust. Be the provider of choice in your area, understand patient sentiment, get actionable insights, and even foster patient loyalty.
And look, here's the easy way you could do that. All you need to do is go visit reputation.com/touchpoint. That's reputation.com/touchpoint, where you can download their healthcare online reputation management guide and build a reputation that performs for you. It's fitting, Reed, for us to kick off the new year with a podcast that's going to look forward, right? And kind of try to think about ways that we can make 2022, not 2020 part two, but really a new transformative year for our organizations, because we've been struggling. As we enter into this new calendar year, we're struggling across our industry. And so to that end, today we're going to kind of focus in on some big ideas and also talk a little bit about some ways that organizations can start to focus their efforts on things looking forward. Let's actually kind of level set against some things that are working really well. We recently found an article from Becker's Hospital Review that shares 10 big ideas in healthcare marketing for the last year. And it quotes healthcare marketing leaders across the country around some of the big ideas that they actually focused in on this year and found some meaningful success.
Let's run through these. You want to start us off and we'll kind of rattle through the list here.
We won't hit all of them, right? We'll hit a few of them, though. So the first one came from Kevin Mabbitt, who's the Senior Vice President and Chief Consumer Officer at Intermountain Healthcare. It's in Salt Lake City. He starts off by saying that healthcare is just like every other industry and has the same kind of consumers. And he really doubled down on this concept of that our industry needs to start connecting the dots between digital and non-digital parts of the healthcare journey to create the seamless and what he calls the consistent experience from end to end.
From end to end. Yeah, I was having some conversations earlier today, actually, with some of my team about patient experience, consumer experience, that kind of thing. And you were talking about when I kind of got into all of this, that was very much just what happened inside a brick and mortar location. And now you can probably argue that more of the experience happens outside. It's before you get there. It's after you've been there, you know, that kind of thing. Certainly, when you think about the healthcare journey, the goal would be to create a seamless, you know, consistent experience. Another one here on the list, Tanya Andreides. At the time, I believe she was still the chief marketing officer out at UCLA Health. She's recently, or since this article came out, moved over to Penn Medicine. But she talked about the authenticity of your brand and knowing your, you know, customers, your consumers. And it's interesting because she talked about the CEO of the organization, again, UCLA, reading reports daily about, you know, what's coming from social media and other channels, what that patient feedback looks like. And she says that brand isn't about what you want to be or what you think looks really cool. It's about respecting your consumers and staff and acting with integrity and providing high quality experiences at every touch point.
I like that because branding isn't about what, you know, you feel is your brand is about. It's really about how your customers and your internal stakeholders align to your overall brand positioning. And many times they can actually create their own view of your brand and even set your own brand in the market that you're in. So I like that approach, right? About really understanding their values and understanding your stakeholders' values so that you can create a brand platform that's has integrity and is exactly right. And related to that is a point that Jennifer Gilkey, who's VP of Communications and Marketing at Dartmouth Hitchcock Health, she indicated that they let collaboration drive their goals rather than starting from a desired outcome and working backwards. That's an interesting point because we always talk about this, Reid, you and I, that when you set a strategy, you define what you want to accomplish and you make goals to get there. Mm-hmm. In this environment, it's a little bit different. Collaborating with peers and others helps to drive the goals.
No, absolutely. And actually, I'll kind of piggyback onto that one with another one here on the list, because I think they kind of go hand in hand or are very similar. But Lisa Schiller, she's the Chief Communication Marketing Officer at UNC Health over in North Carolina in Chapel Hill. But she talks about the collaboration between marketing and other parts of the organization, and that is really the key to successful growth marketing and brand marketing. She looks at that relationship with other, you know, folks in the organization. We've talked about the blurring of the lines, right? It's really hard to determine where things start and stop anymore. And so she talks about that relationship with strategic planning, physician leadership, you know, the operational leadership. You know, you and I, Chris, have talked about quality and IT and all these other parts, legal even, all these other parts of the organization that become critical to, you know, how we drive, you know, our initiatives forward.
And it almost sounds like, you know, if you have that, if you look at the patient experience as one of the desired goals that you're trying to accomplish is to improve that patient experience, having all relevant stakeholders or people that can represent relative stakeholders in these conversations. That's really an interesting approach to solving those problems. Don't get me wrong, I think we still should build strategies with goals in mind, but there is a lot to be said about getting other perspectives as you're trying to problem solve. A few more here, Reid, I think, before we turn to the second part of our conversation. One of the things that Suzanne Hendry, who's a friend of the show, right, Chief Marketing and Customer Officer at Renown Health, she's been on before. She says that one of the mottos that guides the strategic direction for what she's doing with her team is to create raving fans.
There we go.
You know, I think it's desirable, but what that really means is creating new programs, new services, new solutions that are designed around what those fans want, so to speak. Mm. And then moreover, she doubles down on this concept of measuring that fandom, so to speak. And how her team does it is by engagement scores from employees and physicians, net promoter scores, reputation scores from the community, active patients, members of the insurance plan that they have, and even polling MyChart active users to determine if these different experience solutions that they're doing is actually meeting their needs and subsequently converting them to become raving fans.
Raving fans. That makes a ton of sense. And I think, you know, this a lot like the affinity programs we had back in the day, you know, silver sneakers or, you know, the mall walker program or something, or some 55 plus, or you try to sign up folks that were expecting a baby, maybe, you know, you get them into some, you send them the brochure each month that talks about, you know, their third month of pregnancy and that the baby's the size of an avocado, you know, whatever, all that kind of stuff. So I think there is something to be said, certainly, for that affinity piece. You know, and how do you create that connection and that stickiness? And I think what she's talking about is smart, you know, because, I mean, she mentioned, you talked about the measurement side of this. I think that's, you know, really how you understand really how sticky some of these activities become.
So one last quote from Sarah Saldoff, Director of Digital Marketing and Customer Experience at Ohio Health in Columbus. She kind of focuses in a little bit on the digital elements of this and says that they take a holistic approach to understanding how all of the owned and paid channels work together with one another to support that overall experience. This is really the whole concept of human-centered design, right, that we talk about. Really understanding and trying to use all of those things that we can actually measure to get a better sense of what overall is helping and supporting that experience and what's not working, and gives them a very pragmatic way to kind of assess the situation.
Looking at this, you know, outside of just the website is important. And I think we've got to continue to kind of think through the fact that we're not the end destination, not necessarily the beginning. You know, we may play a part in the choice, you know, helping inform folks, but it's not necessarily, you know, where people start and stop, you know. So looking at all these paid channels and things that we rent and own and all that kind of stuff, I think is important to make sure that, yes, that we are all rowing in the same direction.
So these are some really big ideas that health systems across the country are doing, Reid, in order to support and transform their marketing strategies. When we come back from the break, Reid, let's level set a little bit about where we're at, and then we'll share some pragmatic ways that we see that health systems can start to embrace patient experience strategies to transform. We'll do that right after this pause. Coming soon from Greystone, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media, live from HCIC, a new podcast that brings you front row access to the latest innovative strategies that are shaping tomorrow's healthcare industry. In this 12-part series, as recorded live at the Healthcare Internet Conference, we'll hear from industry experts such as Paul Mattson of the Cleveland Clinic, Kathy Smith of Roper St. Francis Healthcare, David Feinberg from Mount Sinai Health System, Rose Glenn from Michigan Medicine, and many others. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcasting platform. This podcast series is brought to you by Greystone.net, Bowstring, and Touchpoint Media.
All right, Chris, before the break, of course, we talked about these big ideas, great Becker's article from a lot of names people probably recognize from around the industry of things they're thinking about and focusing on. And so I think now let's shift a little bit and look at, you know, what we have going on.
All these great ideas we just talked about, they'll work, but only if you have these systems in place. And there's no offense to any of us, right? But I don't think we're all in the same place. We're in an industry right now that's going through a lot of crises.
The math keeps going up. So the last, 20 months? Yeah. We've talked about this for a while. You know, certainly in the beginning, we thought, well, it was going to be a few months and then 6 months and the rest of that year. Well, here we are 20 months later. And you know, we're just going to have another variant after the current variant. I mean, that's just how this works, I guess. And so we're going to have that. Now, out of that has created a lot of other kind of problematic pieces for us with burnout and shortage of staff, not just the clinical burnout, but also just our, you know, our marketing staff even, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And let's also say, to be fair, right, we might be struggling with limited budgets or overall like health system financial shortcomings. It's been a tough couple of years for the health industry, and not a lot of health systems are thriving that well, right? We're struggling with all this. And then let's kind of also focus a little bit too, read on our consumers, on these patients and potential patients in our communities. You and I have been talking a lot about, you know, how those consumer behaviors are changing, how they're wanting to do things. They're moving a lot faster than many businesses themselves can pivot, let alone health systems. And their loyalty is wavering a little bit.
Again, you know, we've talked about the preference versus loyalty piece and some of that. So we won't belabor all that. But yeah, so I mean, you know, we've got a crisis that we don't know if and when it'll really ever go back to the way it was. Maybe it never does. Burnout, the budgets, behaviors are changing all because of some of these things that we've mentioned. We found an interesting article from actiumhealth.com. Again, we'll link to all this stuff in the show notes. And I think this will kind of help us think through, so now what, right? And it's titled 5 Healthcare Patient Experience Predictions for 2022.
Yeah, and patient experience, we know, you and I have been talking about this for nearly 6 years now, Reid. This is where marketing is evolving to. It's becoming the owners of the patient experience. And when I say that in health systems, I know people think about that in different ways. But moreover, it's not only about patient experience, because that's such a big onerous challenge for everyone. They talk a lot about focusing your efforts. And so let's get into some of these healthcare predictions, so to speak, patient experience predictions, and talk through them. And in fact, one of these predictions is actually done by the person that we're going to be interviewing later on in the show. And we'll get to that after we cover 4 of the 5.
Well, they start out the article by talking about the rise of proactive communications. And Mike Leinert, who is Actium Health CEO, said, when it comes to patient engagement and communications, health systems are really being driven by 3 factors. So revenue recovery, so they've got to figure out ways to actually do that. Competition, like you mentioned before, so the loyalty is waning, if you will. And the value-based care, so providers need to identify ways to keep patients healthy versus just doing sick care.
If you think about those 3 things, revenue recovery, competition, and value-based care, putting them all together, it's a huge, lofty, big thing. But if you break them apart in those 3 discrete strategies, so to speak, or focus areas, you can develop maybe some very specific tactics and plans to address each one of those, right?
Yeah, and that's where really the rise of proactive communications come from. You know, you're going to need to like go find people and talk to them to really try to alleviate any of those 3.
And then you can also, as we talked about before, when you do collaborating with other team members in your organization, you might learn things that you yourself don't know in the marketing suite that can best inform that strategy. Collaboration, working together. Obviously, we got the competition that's kind of hurting us a little bit in the marketplace. But if we can leverage and focus in on some of those things that work better for us. We can move some significant, you know, mountains, so to speak. And now that kind of leads into part two, or the second prediction, improved connection between health systems and patients. So this comes from Craig Karchner, who's AVP of Marketing and Customer Experience at Honor Health, who predicts that we're going to see shifts to satisfy consumers' greatest pain points. So let's talk about those greatest pain points of customers as identified by Craig. First, access to care. I would say access to care is probably the biggest pain point from what I know in my experience. It's something that, you know, not only as a consumer of healthcare, but as a professional in this space, it becomes probably the most critical thing we can do, right? So you need to offer customers more and more ways to get care, choosing modalities, virtual health versus in-person, time, place, et cetera. And honestly, kind of shifting the control from us, we'll give you an online appointment schedule if we only have availability, to let the customer decide what they want better. And then communications with care teams, where health systems can organize around that, that the ability to connect and integrate that. I see a lot of progress in that in the patient portals now. You know, that's becoming a really great place where you can connect with your overall care team. And then lastly, navigation. This is probably another big pain point that is maybe latent within your organization right now, is people don't have clear or convenient ways to follow their treatment plans. Craig mentions a very specific thing here. He says, when a patient leaves a primary care appointment, make it seamless for them to take the next steps in their care, to get their labs drawn, to schedule appointments with specialists, et cetera. Focus on that discrete touch point in the customer journey, and that can just overall get you to a win state.
It's an interesting one, right? The communications with care teams. It is going to be interesting to see that flourish, as not really a channel that we've historically spent much time in.
But we should. We're marketers. Mm-hmm. We should know this.
Right. So the next one, Chris, in the list is the evolving role. They say the evolving role of the chief marketing officer. It talks about the fact that over the past several years, many health systems have recognized the important role marketing plays in not just patient engagement, but the overall patient experience and even health outcomes. So this is interesting, right? So they have virtual health in here as an example, and they created a campaign aimed at getting people, you know, back in for their kind of their routine, you know, mammogram screenings. They started with those that they felt were being identified as being at higher risk for breast cancer, and that led to 11,000 new appointments, which resulted in almost 1,400 people being diagnosed that may not have otherwise, you know, scheduled a screening, right? Or at least they hadn't at that point scheduled a screening. So again, we're going from an advertising department to people that are actually impacting people's health and their life.
Wow.
You know, as competition heats up, it says in here, more will realize that breaking down traditional department silos and bringing together diverse skills and experiences is a critical piece of the puzzle, right? So again, what we talked about a little while ago, how do we work with quality? How do we work with IT? How do we work with those that are operating the hospitals and the facilities? It's going to be really important.
Yeah. Again, this sounds like when you talk about it in a big strategy way, it seems a little daunting, but then again, you know, maybe focus in on some of the discrete, smaller opportunities. Where are we seeing the most pain points? The fourth prediction out of five is that payers will accelerate consumer-focused strategies. A lot of what we're talking about here is the overall patient experience, and we know that payers, a lot of times, have been accelerating their movement towards consumer-centric strategies and tactics. Frank Jackson, who works at Actium Health, says, for payers, 2022 will be about playing catch up to consumers and their ever-changing expectations and preferences, as we talked about, right? COVID-19 changed a lot of their priorities, and they're rethinking all aspects of life, where they work, how and where they get their care. And, you know, honestly, payers should be preparing for consumers' changing expectations around buying and consuming their health insurance. Now, it's interesting that we're talking about payers in this space, right? Mm-hmm. But that relationship between the payer and the provider, health systems, is a very strong, strong relationship if you can leverage that. Your health system may have, like Suzanne Henry's does, a health plan as part of your network. Right. You know, that's great. It's a dual entrance into the marketplace. But in this particular case, you could even take advantage of those partnerships that you have with payers in your market to get some insights into what consumers want.
Yeah, and this even kind of dovetails in nicely with some things that we talked about, I don't know, a month or so ago around, you know, consumers going to payer websites to look for a provider. So like, how do you make sure that that information is correct there? So anyway, it's interesting as you start seeing some of these things, you know, come together and start to become, you know, really interesting. I don't even know if they're really predictions. I know they're labeled predictions, but I mean, this just, it just is like this. I don't know that it's a prediction anymore, right? But, you know, the rise of proactive communications, the improved connection between health systems and patients, the evolving role of the CMO and really just marketing in general, and then how the payers kind of play into this are all great. But Chris, I know you had a chance to sit down with Chris Hemphill here recently, which is Actium Health's VP of Applied AI and growth, and talk about
responsible AI, more equitable use of AI and data, which is kind of the linchpin of all of this. The data, it tells the story, right? If you can. We sat down, we had a really good conversation, and we're excited to share that interview with you right after this break. And then after we listen to that, we'll be back, Reed and I, to close out the show.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Welcome back to the Ask the Expert segment of the podcast. And today I'm delighted to be talking with Chris Hemphill from Actium. And Chris, just as for awareness perspective, this is the very first Ask the Expert segment of 2022. I hope you feel honored.
Absolutely, Chris. Like, happy to be welcome back to the show. And yeah, excited to dig into to the topics that you brought up today.
Before we jump into that conversation, would you be able to share a little bit about your background and also a little bit about Actium?
My background comes from a mixture of sales and marketing and data science. An unusual combination, but coming out of college, I went into the sales world and then went into sales world for a healthcare analytics company, but gradually got more interested in the actual predictions and data science and how we use algorithms to further our understanding about the human condition and take actions that help people better their care. Where that fits in at Actium Health is focused on driving the actions that people need to engage their own care and improve their healthcare status. Mm-hmm. So that's using the data points from electronic medical records, from marketing automation, from how people interact, from population health data sets, all sorts of different data sets to identify what are the next best steps that people should be taking to better engage and improve their healthcare conditions. Another thing that I like to focus on is that we've actually started a podcast called Hello Healthcare. That podcast, similar and I would say inspired by you, Chris, is for people that are interested in driving change in some way within their healthcare systems. Every once in a while, you'll get the 20-person healthcare startup that says they're going to transform healthcare, a $3 trillion system. Probably not. You're probably not going to do that with your 20 folks in a basement, but if you can drive an organization to change by 0.01% or drive a group of people to have their own incremental change, I think that's valuable too. So you might not be, like I personally might not be able to transform healthcare, entirely, but I do think that it's to be celebrated if we can get that 0.01% somewhere and like celebrate that along with the other hundreds of thousands of people that are trying to do the same thing.
Absolutely. And it's a really great podcast. And for those listening in, we will definitely link to it in the show notes so you can actually access that. I strongly recommend subscribing. You know, Chris, one of the reasons why we're talking today is in part of the research we were doing around the show, Reed and I came across an article that was actually published by your organization, Actium, called Five Healthcare Patient Experience Predictions for 2022. The one that kind of jumped out at me and led me to reach out to you is the one of the predictions was around using data and AI in a better way, in a more equitable way. So let's talk about that, because I think that that's very important to our industry. When we think about AI and data, I know that you have your pulse on this. This is what you do. Give us a sense of where we're at as an industry today. How is that being used in health systems? And also, let's address a little bit about how marketing is currently using AI and data to help support their initiatives.
Sure thing. And I'll probably focus more in on the marketing component. The work that I focus on is much more focused on outreach than it is on like the things that you might be hearing about how imaging data sets are being used to predict things like presence of breast cancer tissue and things like that. There's a lot of research. There's a lot of activity going on all sides of the house. But when it comes to the data and AI perspective, I would say that before 2010, before the data were available, we have basically your broad shotgun marketing type approaches. Then in your 2010s era, as the High Tech Act and meaningful use drove EMR adoption, you started to open up these use cases to where now I don't have to try to take the 400 and some odd services that I advertise and just get lucky with billboards and things like that. Now I can be extremely focused. I can slice and dice audiences and target people based on things like age and various demographics and prior conditions, things that we can pick from the EMR or pick from their demographic data. That's something to celebrate, right? We were able to get into segmented models. But then when let's take an example of like the common criteria to run a cardiology campaign. Typically, women who are 55 and above, men who are 45 and above, and potentially a visit code or an encounter code that's associated with a prior incident related to cardiology. With that, okay, it's great that we can start slicing down audiences, but you can see that you're building bias into the system already. Mm-hmm. And how is that? Well, it's assuming that if you're below 45, there's absolutely no need. Like if you're not going to be sending communications, then it's assuming there's absolutely no need for cardiology communications to that segment of the audience. Then there's a gender bias that's built in as well. If you're a woman who is below 55, then same concept. Then it's assuming that there's no need. So what AI is doing and where we're really focused on maximizing the use of data is to look at further nuances than just age and just gender and things like that. And the comparison that I like to make, like I don't like to get extremely complicated in discussing AI. The simple concept is, Chris, you throw a spreadsheet at me that has more than three columns, more than three characteristics defining a patient, like you have numbers down more than three columns, I'm not going to know what to do with that. That's too much information to get the nuance needed. That's why, like within an EMR, you have thousands of characteristics that are being tracked on patients, and then you start adding even more and more to that as you're tracking like through your marketing automation systems and other pathways that they're interacting. But what the beauty of what's going on now is you're able to get into more and more nuance. What it's doing is saying, okay, we're not just going to look at age and gender. We'll look at factors like systolic blood pressure. We'll pass visit codes, various biomarkers, thousands of characteristics to make better predictions and incorporate that nuance that removes those kinds of age and gender biases that are kind of hurting marketing and outreach performance.
I think when we start talking about bias in data or bias in healthcare, we think about some very specific things around, you know, there've been studies published and reports around, you know, bias against particular, maybe like you described, like gender or age or ethnicities and those sorts of things. But bias can happen in multiple different ways that are not necessarily specifically tied to like a socioeconomic criteria. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. In my description, I wanted to kind of frame up the picture of AI in general using those data points. But the thing about those data points is, if we're looking at information based on, you know, these people had these visits, then you get these millions of people, these 5 million people had these visits across the past 5 years, and here were their biomarkers and things like that. The assumption, there's a built-in assumption there. For somebody to visit a healthcare system for that data to be analyzed, they have to have been able to afford that service. They have to be culturally predisposed, like they're among different ethnicities, even though some people might be just as sick as somebody in another ethnic group, just because of cultural reasons, they might be less likely to go out and seek hospital or external care. So there's all kinds of all kinds of different things that are based on affordability, based on the overall economics and access to care, that people are forgetting in a lot of cases, forgetting to consider. Like this, when we're venturing into this responsible AI concept, it's basically saying that if the data are based on people that could afford care, people of a certain wealth class and a certain socioeconomic status, then there's more work to be done to make sure that these models are reflecting and fair to people in various income groups, ethnic groups, racial groups, et cetera. That basically it's saying that great that we've been able to segment, great that we've been able to get more targeted, but there's still more to be done to make sure that we're providing our outreach equitably.
The boldness of your statement in this article that we're going to link to in the show notes indicates that you said responsible AI will be a greater focus in 2022, and that healthcare leaders will seek more responsible and equitable approaches. What are some of the ways that you see healthcare leaders across the industry right now looking to maybe cross that gap between using AI and data to becoming more responsible around that use?
Every time a new technology comes out, there's kind of like an additional hype around it, but then people start asking the deeper questions. In the mid-2010s, there was a lot of excitement around just the concept of AI in general and the concept of being able to use these algorithms to make predictions. But back in 2019, I think that this was a big turning point. This was a study that Dr. Ziad Obermeyer put out with regards to an algorithm that was performing extremely well for white patients, but significantly underserving Black patients in the population that they were studying. That algorithm got a lot of press, a lot of attention, and obviously, responsible AI has been a focus for a much longer time than that. But I think that was kind of the wake up call that a lot of folks in healthcare needed to start getting interested in how healthcare algorithms might be disparaging Black, Latinx, Asian patients, even white patients in some cases. With that kind of publication coming out and increased conversations around responsible AI, hopefully even this conversation, there's just so much more awareness around the problem right now than there was a couple of years ago. And when we really think about it, there's kind of an obligation that's created there. Once you know that there are that bias does exist within the economic context, within the business process context, within bias exists among people who are admitting people into care or listening to people and determining, is this person truly sick? Should we put them on meds and bid them adieu, or are there deeper underlying issues here? There's bias all throughout it, not just in AI, but it gets reflected in the data based on the actions of people. With the increased awareness around this, I think that a lot that people are going to be much less willing to accept algorithms that perform poorly for underserved populations.
You know, as I think about what you say, Chris, I also think about that some of the strategies that we even adopt in the marketing suite are inherently biased. And I know you and I have talked about this before. Like, just the mere fact of developing a digital advertising outreach program, for example, that has some inherent bias in it because it assumes that the recipients are the receivers of this. And while everyone uses digital, so to speak, not everyone responds to digital marketing tactics and campaigns the same way. Are you seeing that as well?
Definitely. Digital has its place, and it's been able to reach people that otherwise wouldn't have been reached. But if we say that we're going 100% digital and we're going to completely ignore phones from now on, then we're going to still, like, we might be finding some new segment of people, but failing to reach out to other people who wouldn't receive digital communications. I think that with any marketing effort should be focused on finding what the most appropriate outreach channel is for that individual. The past era was based on like broad sweeping segmentations, but now with the prevalence of AI, you can start looking more specifically rather than like how people fit into this particular age group, or is this a millennial or Generation X, how do they respond? It's more on, hey, what does their past behavior indicate? What do their preferences stated indicate? That can be extremely helpful in reaching out to people. I would say that another bias that is kind of inherent is if you're launching a campaign, most of the time, like I hear this constantly, though, it is, okay, well, let's make sure that we're reaching out only to commercially insured, et cetera, patients. So yep. I definitely understand why that's a priority for a lot of campaigns. But one important focus is understanding what are the characteristics of our Medicaid and Medicare populations and the people that might not be able to afford the most expensive services, and what kinds of, like if we can start looking at the data in those pools of patients as well, then we can start looking at what kinds of care or access or channels can we open up that are economical for them too.
Right. Absolutely. Economically. And this is really centered around that individual patient now, and ensuring that their experience is more apt to what their needs are. And I think that ultimately is the goal of what we're trying to do around personalizing our marketing efforts. We're going down this path where we're going to need data and AI to kind of help us to deduce exactly what is that right message to them, or what is the right action for them. You know, it's almost like the concept of digital health equity, or inequity, so to speak, right? There's a lot of inequity in digital health solutions. I also think there's a lot of inequity in digital marketing solutions, quite frankly. I almost want to bring up that term of digital marketing inequity. I'm testing that out with you. How do you feel about that term?
I think I'll have to start using that immediately. It makes sense. It's again, if I say health equity, well, what kind of health equity? What exactly do you mean when you say that? And I think that the more specific we can be, I try to bring up specific examples, cardiology campaigns and models and things like that. I try to bring that stuff up because if we keep it at that 20,000 foot level, then there's nothing to connect to there. But when we say digital marketing inequity, that kind of inspires a focus on, oh, well, digital marketing is extremely convenient to measure and things like that, but we still would miss our populations by not sending out a mailer or not calling. So I agree with your use of that term because it allows people to focus in on the area of inequity that is a problem.
Right. And actually using digital tools to reach people that maybe are not necessarily highly profitable for the organization, but very highly dependent on the care services that we provide, honestly. You know, that leads to marketing more focused on the overall experience, which I think is the spectrum that we're walking down, right, with these digital tools that we're using.
When we start getting an understanding on what level of profitability like an individual person might have, like, okay, so they might not be as profitable as the commercially insured patients, but when you start looking at, and I know a lot of organizations don't have access to financial data and things like that, and even when they do, it's still hotly debated on, do we use charges and what does that actually mean and those kinds of things. But it's important to start looking at the data around, given the swath of this population, given that we have so many in our community that need care in this kind of way, what are some economics like? How do we look at the economics of the solution that we can provide to them, rather than keeping those populations out of the outreach? It becomes a matter of, okay, just given that these people might have a customer lifetime value or residual lifetime value of X amount over the next 12 months, there are avenues that we can make available to provide services, or we can look at like annual wellness visits, for example. There's direct monetary incentives for bringing people in. The information that's found during that physical exam or during that examination then feeds into other services that those patients might need. So it's always a matter of identifying like again, we always want to do the right thing, but we also have to be able to justify it. And I think that when we look at things like lifetime value and churn risk and those kinds of things, we can start figuring out equitable paths for everybody.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I always think about ROI as one thing is to the direct contribution that you make from your effort, but also another way to look at ROI is money saved. Right. Or, you know, the overall expense over the lifetime of the patient, and some of these populations that could be better served by some of the efforts that we're doing, we could avert a lot of overhead costs, long-term care costs for those communities. Let me pivot a little bit here, Chris. I want to talk a little bit about healthcare technology vendors as well, because we're awash in the digital marketing suite with everybody now has become a data broker. Website CMS companies have personalization and data elements. CRM companies and others are kind of brokering in data. Digital marketing agencies that are out there, media buyers, et cetera. We're all awash in data. So how do you see responsible AI kind of impacting the health tech space?
You brought up a bunch of different examples of like there's website vendors, there's people that there's population health, there's all these pockets of people that want to interact with patients. With responsible AI, what's happening right now, the phase that we're in right now, there's talks on regulations and things like that, which I think will be necessary in the coming years, but I don't see that like having something solidly defined for 2022. Right now, what healthcare leaders can focus on is holding these vendors, holding these data brokers accountable for the types of systems that they offer. So, for example, if you are evaluating something that looks at patient populations, determines these people need cardiology outreach, or these people need this or that type of outreach, then that's a perfect example of saying, hey, let's hit the pause button. Let's figure out, though, of these people that are identified, does that reflect the racial breakdown or the gender breakdown of our surrounding population? What kinds of biases exist in that data? How well does this algorithm perform? How accurate is this algorithm? Overall, cool. You can always like celebrate that overall metric, but then when you start breaking something down, like let's say that, and I'll just use this as a generic term. This isn't reflecting any kind of numbers of any actual system, but let's say that a vendor tells you that this is 99.99% accurate. Okay, fantastic. But then let's break that down. How accurate is it on Black population, white population, Asian population, et cetera. When you start disambiguating and breaking down performance, holding vendors accountable to have broken down that performance and taken responsible approaches, then you really, you're really pushing the needle forward in how we can start approaching this thing. There's the vendor side. Vendors have to start identifying this, kind of seeing to the future and seeing what's possible and where they can help and where they can drive health equity. But that really depends on having people internally that just want to do the right thing. On the other side, healthcare, like in healthcare systems, great example, UCSF. They actually did a presentation recently with Duke Margolis Center for Policy, and they evaluated Epic's sepsis prediction algorithm. And I'm not exactly sure what variables that they had identified that they identified as problematic that the algorithm was using. They said, hold on, based on the way that this algorithm works, based on the way it performs, based on how it performs with underserved patients, we don't want to use this algorithm. We're going to develop something else internally, but we're not going to use this. We're not going to purchase this particular service because it doesn't perform up to our standards. I want vendors, I want digital health, people in digital health and health tech to focus on this. But when it comes to the fact that like in the situation, when negotiating, the vendor doesn't really have the power in that relationship, the hospital does. It does fall on the healthcare leaders to understand, like take that UCSF example and start asking for these breakdowns, start holding vendors accountable to be transparent and make sure that's the healthcare leader's part in making sure that they're not deploying irresponsible AI.
Many people listening in are starting to think about like, well, what are ways that we could internally start to go down this path? And it seems like much in the spirit of your podcast, Chris, right? It seems like transformation is so huge and so hard to do. This problem seems big and very difficult to kind of manage as well. Do you have anything practically that maybe they could start to do today that will allow them to move towards this utilization of, or at least have an awareness of using AI and data in a responsible way?
I'll say this. I've looked at lots and lots of requests for proposals for data-driven systems, CRM, CRM intelligence, things like that. And in those RFPs will have requests for things like certain feature sets, like build the audience builder this way, et cetera. But I've not seen a single RFP, and this is this observer bias. There could be people out there incorporating this into their request, but nobody I've seen has said, "Hey, break this down in the way that I just said." They'll say, "Hey, how accurate are your overall systems?" But we need to get further into not just the overall accuracy, but start breaking that down, get specific, get nuanced. How does this perform for Black versus white versus et cetera patients, male, female? Start holding vendors accountable by looking for those breakdowns, asking about it in RFPs. I mean, there's a whole lot I think that healthcare leaders can do without having to go and get a master's in data science. There's a whole lot that you can do to ask the right questions to know how to hold a vendor accountable.
Absolutely. And another thing they can do is reach out to you. Would you mind sharing a little bit with people about if they want to, you know, carry on this conversation, or at least read more about some of the great stuff that you do? What's a great way for them to reach you online?
The easiest and least confusing way is to hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm sure most people are here on LinkedIn, so you can look up Chris Hemphill there. Or if you want more snark and sarcasm, that's my Twitter presence, and that is Luke_Trailrunner. I think LinkedIn would probably be the easiest.
Absolutely. And then, of course, subscribe to your podcast and start to listen to some of the things that you're saying, because you're laying down some very heavy wisdom in that show. So I really appreciate your voice in the overall.
You know what? Yeah, the Hello Healthcare podcast. And to get specific on this topic, actually, if you go on YouTube and search End Racism in Healthcare Outreach, you'll actually find a really good presentation that we put together with University of Chicago Booth School of Business Center for Applied AI. And yeah, I did practice saying that because it's a mouthful.
Well, I definitely have to track that down and link to it as well in the show notes. Chris, thank you so much for this great conversation. Always thought-provoking, always insightful, and always just so relevant to today's conversation. Thank you so much for joining.
Well, thank you for providing a platform and being willing to discuss things like this.
Well, it's my pleasure. I think that we all have our own part to play in solving this overall issue that's facing our industries.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
All right, special thanks to Chris, not you, but the other Chris Hemphill for coming. I mean, thanks for coming on the show as well. This would be hard to do if you weren't on here, but really appreciate Chris Hemphill for coming on and spending a few minutes. It was neat to be able to kind of tie that into the article and kind of where we are as we kick off 2022. Again, quick plug for the website, touchpoint.health. Sign up for the TPS report. We'll start putting the links in there for the upcoming conferences. We're almost there. I know we're just kicking off the year, but it's going to be time to start thinking about conferences and where you may want to be and where you may want to go. And more to come on that. Chris and I, I'm sure, fingers crossed, we'll make it to some this year. We'll see kind of how the world spins, I guess, between now and then. But hopefully that all pans out, and we look forward to seeing some folks in person. Before we say goodbye, maybe a couple recommendations for this week.
Reed, I'm going to recommend something that I got under the Christmas tree this year because it combines two of my interests together. So you know that I like music. And in fact, I really like jazz music. And I also like graphic novels, which is the adult way of saying comic books. I found under the tree this year a great graphic novel about Charlie Parker, who is a famous bebop jazz musician. And it's called Chasing the Bird, a Charlie Parker graphic novel. Charlie Parker, he was one of the most influential jazz saxophonists, and he influenced, you know, everyone from John Coltrane to Miles Davis to others, you know, in terms of the advancement of jazz music. Mm. Clearly, with a person of this stature and nature, he also, by the way, had a very serious problem with drugs. He got hooked on heroin, and so his life was kind of very chaotic as well, as you can imagine. This graphic novel takes together accounts of when he went to California for a series of months. He even went missing for six of those months. And through third-party stories, they narrate what happened to him. So much so that the authors and artists of the books, they even have appendices in the back of the comic book that says, you know, go back and read this section and listen to this song by Charlie Parker and match every four measures. It's a panel of this comic. So you can actually listen to the music and read the comic book at the same time. It's an immersive multi-channel experience. It took me just a few days to finish it. Really, really great book. And I recommend it to anyone who might be interested. Chasing the Bird, a Charlie Parker graphic novel.
Nice. Chris, I'm going to recommend something kind of analog like you are. And it's also fairly generic, a jigsaw puzzle. Probably did, I don't know, six of these over the break, maybe. I don't know. A lot. Now, some of this is because I have an addictive personality and, you know, it's like I can't not finish it, not do it. But anyway, it seems like these kind of come out around holidays. You know, you get one out, you got it on the table. We did some at the beginning of the pandemic thinking like, oh, this is neat. You know, we're home for a short time. You know, here we are 20 months later. Did a number of them and it was a lot of fun. It was neat to not look at a screen and be able to sit there and just kind of have it out. You know, you can sit down for 10 minutes and kind of work on a piece and the kids got involved and I may have to figure out an additional table to put in the house somewhere up in the playroom or something like that where we can keep a puzzle out. So really enjoy that. And they're not terribly expensive. And it's really interesting. It's one of those things that you can take it back apart, put it up, and a year from now you could get it back out and you could do it again because it's not like it's not like you're spoiling it, right? I mean, right. You know, like you already know what it's going to look like. It's a puzzle, you know. So yeah, so I'm recommending picking up a jigsaw puzzle if you've got a little bit of time here in the new year. It's a fun way, especially those of us that work in this industry, to use a little different part of your brain, maybe, or not have to stare at a screen, you know, that kind of thing. So there you go.
Yeah, that's a great recommendation. I love jigsaw puzzles. Are you a fan of the 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle or the 500 or?
I typically go with a 1,000-piece. That seems to be a decent size that, you know, you could finish it relatively, you know, in a reasonable amount of time. Mm-hmm. We got one that if you can imagine what like Baskin Robbins or something, you're looking at all the ice creams, you know, in the case, you know, there's just a bunch of flavors in a row. But instead of it actually being ice cream, it was Lego pieces.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, it was just a bunch of similar colored Lego pieces, which was actually a pretty easy one to do because it's like a lot of little mini puzzles in one, you know, kind of thing. And so that one went pretty quick. Some of them were a little bit longer. It took a little bit more time, you know, that are more the traditional kind of a scene of some sort, you know, with cars and a restaurant in the background, you know, and that kind of thing. So I think all the ones we did were 1,000 piece.
Awesome. Well, that's a lot of fun.
Absolutely is. Well, thanks again, everybody. We really appreciate y'all tuning in here in the new year. We'd love to hear from you. Heard from several of you over the break and certainly appreciate that. But if you've got thoughts, ideas for the show, topics we should cover, people we should talk to, reach out to us. LinkedIn, Twitter is usually the best way to track Chris or I down. And plus we just love to hear from you, like hearing what you have gained from listening to the show and things like that. But check out the website, touchpoint.health. Follow us online, rate, review, subscribe, wherever you happen to listen or stream. Chris Boyer, I'm Reed Smith, and we'll see you next week.
This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.